Chip Patterson, my friend. Cover 3 podcast, CBSSports.com. Oh, what's soccer shirt are we wearing today?
Fiorentina takes on West Ham for the Europa Conference League final
today,
3 p.m. Stream it on Paramount Plus. When you consider
is that a Fiorentina shirt?
Oh, absolutely, okay. Forza Viola. Come on. Okay. Of all the Serie A Premier League battles that are happening in the next week, certainly this is the most important. Not Inter against Man City. Definitely not that. It is on Paramount Plus. It's at 3 p.m. And look, I say this, you know, with a little, I'm getting a little choked up because this might be the end for Vinny Italy. Vincenzo Italiano has done great things for Fiorentina, and he is rumored to maybe be the next man at Napoli. So
Napoli might lose Osimhen. He is a hot rumor to maybe even head to Manchester United, who is desperately seeking a striker. And I don't see Harry Kane leaving Tottenham to go to Manchester United.
Spalletti's just out. He's just like, okay, I want it. That's fine. I'm gonna take a year off.
I know. Wout Weghorst is going back to wherever Wout Weghorst came from. All right, Chip. Our friend Andrew Carter from the News and Observer has been writing a series of articles. And I always, by the way, the incoming, if you will, because they haven't yet had the ceremonies, North Carolina Sports Writer of the Year, Andrew Carter, so give him a shout out for that. But he's writing a series of pieces about the soul of the Atlantic Coast Conference, essentially. Now, you and I have talked about this before in the last couple of, conversations. We've talked about, what some of the power brokers in the ACC would like the league to look like going forward, smaller, more traditionally, although we kind of leave Wake Forest out of those conversations, even though we probably shouldn't. Is it even, and this is my argument with the Greensboro people, we need the headquarters in Greensboro. We can't bring the ACC basketball tournament. We shouldn't be in New York. We shouldn't be on Saturday nights. Is it counterproductive to be so bent on maintaining all of the traditions?
No. There is one example.
You and I disagree here.
Well, there is one example recently that, and I haven't thought about this a lot until you just mentioned it, but you and I have a thought-provoking friendship. We provoke thoughts in each other. It's one of the things I love about it. But I think the Big East has rebounded. Now, the problem is there is a lot more that needs to happen, for the ACC, because Clemson and Florida State and Miami are not in this to be the premier basketball conference with must-see conference college basketball games. But that is an example of a league that was at the top of its sport, literally collapsed, and has come back in a way that I think is incredibly strong. That one, top to bottom in the standings, everybody is good. Everybody lifts each other up. Butler can have a bad team, but Butler still is a draw and interesting and competitive, even when they are the ninth or tenth best team. Georgetown, we'll see what happens with Ed Cooley. Rick Pitino goes to St. John's. Like the Big East is an example of, I guess, recapturing memories of old and actually making it work. The problem is the ACC has goals that are not in the ACC's history, that the ACC wants to compete at college football at the highest level when the ACC as a conference has not been at the top of college football. There have been programs that have had, obviously, Florida State sustained success and Clemson a recent run, but the culture of the ACC is not college football success at the highest level.
Yeah, which is why, in my opinion, trying to cater to the soul of the ACC is not only counterproductive, but it's probably economically foolish.
It is economically foolish.
Right?
So counterproductive and economically foolish. I just think there is a path for if the ACC wants to become this incredibly collegiate basketball forward conference and who cares about football, then you're probably going to say goodbye to some schools 8, 9, 10 years down the line. Yeah. But yeah, you could do that. You could have that kind of reputation. You're just going to be a loser at the bank and you're going to get be saying goodbye to some of your premier brands.
Here's what's interesting, because you talked about Big East, and they don't even play football as a league anymore. And I saw Brett McMurphy from the Action Network tweet yesterday that intimated that the schools in the Big 12 are all interested in adding UConn, which just went back to the Big East. And I am of the mind that one of the reasons that they returned to the top of men's college basketball is because they went back where they belong, playing in that conference. But even that conference isn't that conference anymore, because it's going to sound weird. Creighton and Marquette don't scream Big East basketball to me, nor does Butler. But oh, I get why they're all in the same league, but basketball-oriented schools, that's fine. But it's just funny how even that league has shifted in many modern ways. To me, we need to get out of the mindset in the ACC. I want to maintain scheduling traditions. I want to maintain some of those rivalry traditions. But if we focus too much on the other stuff, I think it works against us. Like, Greensboro's cute. No, I'm not trying to offend Greensboro. The Coliseum it seats 20-some-odd thousand people. That's awesome. They run it great. But that should be kind of a special occasion stop for the ACC men's basketball tournament. You got to take it to destination cities and destination venues. No offense to Greensboro. I'm not trying to say we're better than that. But the city of Greensboro, the league has outgrown Greensboro. I think all of our sensibilities have to change.
I like Greensboro.
I like it too. Whether I like it or not.
But I think that you could still make the argument that whether it's Virginia Tech, whether it's Clemson, that you still are talking about nearly half of the conference can get in a car and drive.
Sure. No, it is a super central, convenient.
Yeah, it's a central location to be able to get fans there, and I think that was me getting turned off from Brooklyn. You know, like
like Brooklyn.
I would take DC for example if you want to go major city, because then you still have the opportunity to be able to, or as I would do, get on that train and take it on up to DC. But
100%.
There is a driving. That's. We did a draft your ideal conference on the Cover 3 podcast, and the conference that unveiled.
I'm trying to think how many years ago we did that on the old afternoon show.
So I was the 10-hour conference. I put together a 14-team league where every single school was within 10 hours. Everyone was within a 10-hour get in the car and drive, because I'm trying to bring back the road trips to road games. And so, like, I had Georgia, and I had Clemson, and I had Tennessee, and I had Florida, and I had Florida State. We didn't go further north than Virginia Tech, and we did not include Miami. It did have a lot of ACC, sure, but everyone was within 10 hours of each other trying to bring back that regionality. So I will say that if we're talking about the ACC tournament or other events like that, I think the football championship game is perfect in Charlotte.
Yep.
I would like for it to be a car ride, a road trip to as many schools as possible, because as we have continued to work our way down the line and college sports has become less regional, I will hold on to as much regionality as possible, because the fan of college sports wants to live around other fans of their team, and more importantly, I would argue, the rivals of their team.
I agree. So that
whether you're going to the office, whether you're going to church, whether you're at your kid's soccer game or at school, that other people around you are also interested in the same stuff that you are, and you've got that competition that bleeds over. Because, look, we talk about college football for 12 months, and there's only 12 daggum games.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be able to preserve the rivalries so that the passion can be something that is not just seasonal and social.
You and I are in agreement. When it comes to scheduling, we need to be smarter to preserve the rivalries, because for the most part, these create interest among the fan base. We want those games sold out, and we want those games also to have some television interest to drive television ratings up. My plan has always been DC and Charlotte. Those should be the two main hubs for the ACC men's basketball tournament. Greensboro, you go to anniversaries, 75th, 90th, whatever. You know, we go there on special occasions, but D.C., Charlotte. D.C., Charlotte. Maybe it's a couple of years here, a couple of years there. Occasional one-offs to some, hey, let's throw it to Atlanta one year. I know it's the people are laughing. Atlanta can do a good job if they care. Throw it to Boston one year, whatever. And I would never...
Don't throw it to Boston.
Okay, you're probably right there.
Hey, listen, Matt,
The only way I would go to New York, the only way, is Madison Square Garden. I wouldn't go back to Brooklyn again. Talk about soul. Brooklyn, there's no soul at Barclays Center. Zero. None.
Greensboro is special, though.
Of course. There's like, soul there.
There is some soul there.
I'm not anti that, but...
So I'm kind of the mindset that right now the identity crisis is in part so fundamental that you can't change it. That on one level, the makeup of the conference includes schools that do not look like the massive state schools that overwhelm the Big Ten and the SEC. You've talked about that a lot. Yeah. The other piece of the identity crisis is that when the ACC was the wealthiest conference in college sports with more money off its television deal than anybody else in college sports, the media rights partners who set the market and determine the costs, they valued basketball more than they valued football.
They did.
And that has flipped. So fundamentally, these two things have just created like the soul, the identity, the genes and DNA of the conference are things that do not carry the same value as they do in the current marketplace.
By the way, it's about 22 years since the ACC was paying out more money. It's not that long ago when the ACC was the wealthiest conference. But at that point, it was like $9 million per school in shared media revenue. All right, we don't have much time left, but you and I are big fans of the game of golf. So when the news hit yesterday, I don't know if you did a CBS Sports HQ hit on it, but your thoughts on the working agreement, I guess, between the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the Public Investment Fund.
Each week, we dive into the mind of the con artist, uncovering the secrets behind the biggest Ponzi schemes you never heard about.
We're not talking about Bernie Madoff or Charles Ponzi.
That's right. Those guys have been covered to death. The Ponzi Playbook will focus on those fraudsters who have swindled millions from unsuspecting investors. Subscribe to the Ponzi Playbook wherever you get your podcasts.
I think it's going to be very, very tough to continue to deal with the frustrations from the players who at most straight up turned down money. And at minimum, if they weren't turning down money, they were at least putting themselves at risk of criticism for caping up and supporting the PGA Tour. And the way, I mean, Rory's using terms like sacrificial lamb.
He did today.
This morning. And according to reports in that players meeting yesterday with Jay Moynihan, there's been, you know, a standing ovation when someone called for a change in leadership. This is going to be very, very difficult for me to see the PGA Tour getting through this without there being some L's or at least some like leadership changes or somebody's going to have to end up taking charge because there does appear to be a big, big, big leadership vacuum. Okay. Next thing, cause I know we're way past injury time. I like Kyle Porter indicating that the Saudis really wanted to be in golf.
Yeah.
They didn't care as much about LIV specifically as a league.
Nope.
They just wanted to be in golf at the highest level. They've got that.
Yes.
What does that mean for LIV? What does that mean for those on that who were a part of that tour? Would, if there's a way to reapply, do they even want to reapply? Does everything that Dustin Johnson said about not wanting to play the same kind of schedule, does that all get thrown out the window and now all of a sudden we see a full schedule for Dustin Johnson again?
Well, all of those reasons were all BS anyway. We all knew that. I saw Dustin Johnson
looking at his career and at what Dustin Johnson likes to do and the idea that you were going to be forced to play X number of events per year. I saw from Dustin's perspective that this was an attractive opportunity.
Yeah, but it's basically the same because it was a 14-event series. It was supposed to be 15 initially. So that plus the four plus majors four plus the playoffs, it's basically the same. So playing less was never – this was always about, oh, my gosh, they're going to give me $200 million up front to do this? Yeah, I'm in. So that's what it was about. It was never about anything but money. And whatever, I'm not saying that's bad or not. That's just always what it was about. This is not about growing the game. This is not about any of that. It's about the PGA Tour needed to they needed an influx of cash.
Oh, and are you still in on the idea that the lawsuits and the Department of Justice investigation, like if you didn't have great legal standing, and I'm not a lawyer,
right?
But at least it was going to be headaches and like costing a lot of money to go through all of the different process in this, because that was so prominently placed in the press release.
Yes.
Like line four, paragraph one.
Lawsuit's this, over. There's
this ends all litigation. In the letter to the players, point number one, this ends the lawsuit. It right. sure seems to be a big selling point at a minimum.
The lawsuits are over. But the more I read about this, that doesn't mean that the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, isn't going to come in and say, you know what? That is a monopoly.
Oh, the new entity.
Right. So no idea how that's going to play out. They might just say, whatever, it's professional sports. You could probably say the same thing about Major League Baseball or the NFL, blah, blah, blah. But at least the lawsuits are over. PGA Tour was afraid of losing tons of money. And frankly, I think what you said a second ago is that the public investment fund, they didn't really care. They didn't care about Greg Norman's vision to destroy the PGA Tour.
No, the 54-hole idea or anything else. No, they want to be in golf
right.
at the highest levels.
Yes.
And this was a path in. And like, what if this is also what Jay Monahan sort of saw the entire time?
I don't believe Monahan saw this. I believe, and here's the thing, I believe that they still, in their hearts, believe that they were on a good path, and the more I hear is that they financially could not pull off what they were trying to pull off. And sponsors were worried that they could not afford what the PGA Tour was asking of them, and that they were running the risk of losing some major sponsors, because if you're jacking your purses up like they were, that's where the money's coming from. The money is coming from sponsors. They could not compete with Saudi money. But I think the Saudis also didn't want to be just lighting money on fire, even though they could, because the sovereign wealth fund just regenerates all the time. But that's why I think what we're going to see is what we're going to see. And I don't know, Liv might be done after right. this year. And then we have other issues with how do those players get reincorporated into the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, or whatever. So
does this save the Ryder Cup? Can they get it done in time? Because honestly,
no,
I don't think it does. Okay, I couldn't think of any Euros that I was excited would maybe be a part of it. I mean, Sergio's a mascot at this point.
None of them are. None of those European players are playing well enough to be part of the European Tour. The European Ryder Cup,
an incredible addition to the United
but States. Kepka would be eligible. Kepka okay. and I believe Dustin Johnson might not be, because Kepka's a member of the PGA of America by virtue of winning the PGA.
Ah,
so I think both Kepka and DJ, and there's not that rule. There are loose rules, but I think DJ and Kepka would have both been on the U.S. team. I don't know what the European side's going to look like, but I mean, Rahm's good.
Fitzpatrick's good.
Rory's good. They've got some good players. So
Rory, Rahm, Fitzpatrick. I mean, we're talking about like
pretty good.
top shelf type guys, and the coward Tyrrell Hatton just in there being a thorn in your side.
If he just played better when it mattered, he's a little too wound up. Chip Patterson, as I am every Wednesday when we speak. Chip Patterson at Chip_Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast. All right, you and I will talk more about life next week.
It's been a real cavalcade of stars today. If you haven't listened
we're not done.
Just now, go check out the podcast. I mean, goodness gracious. College World Series,
yeah,
Super Regional managers, and God, Listen, I feel honored to be a part of this bill.
And October 22nd, by the way. October 21st. Inter Miami at Charlotte FC.
Ooh.
Lionel Messi.
Hey, listen, let's do another unsolicited plug for Amtrak. Hop back on that train and head down there for the match.
All right, good luck to Fiorentina today.
Thanks. Sounds good. Y'all be well.
All right, man.